Speak your mind. 888-808-1019. Powered by Paramount Plus. Stream the NFL on CBS live on Paramount Plus.
All right, 1 hour down, three more to go. As we take you till 5 o'clock in the warm-up show, McMonagle here with you in the overnights, 888-808-1019, back from vacation. We got to get to a couple of things, tell you about what happened with me, and then specifically a certain name shout-out that I have a real problem with. We got to have some fun with that in a little bit. But let's talk about the Mets real quick, who obviously went into the All-Star break winning five of those very important six games. Right, taking care of the Nationals, taking care of the first two against Colorado, and then losing that last game against the Rockies, which has everybody, especially Evan Roberts, hearkening back to 2021 when they lost that last game of the first half, and then what happened after that. And what happened here after the All-Star break is they lose the first two of three with a four game coming later today. Against Miami, a team that has been one of the worst in all of baseball and yet still has a winning record against the Mets this year, which is remarkable. They can't beat anybody else in the division. They beat the Mets. But they take two of the first three games. And really, listen, what's happened here is the offense has cooled off. I mean, you know, yes, you know, Scott gave up a home run. The bullpen hasn't been as good. You know, Daniel Nunez had a bad performance for him for the first time in a while. But you watch this team, even the one game they won, it's a run on a ground out, which could have been a double play, but it's a run on a ground out from Alvarez. That's the only run in the game. You got a very good performance from Severino, who's been a godsend, and we'll spend more time on Severino and what they should do, because a couple of very knowledgeable Met fans that I trust are hunting, put him out there in the market and let him get sold. I don't know how I feel about that, but we'll get to that. But here's the one player I want to talk about, because yes, obviously the offense is struggling. You know, JD Martinez has not been what he was at the beginning of this hot streak. We've seen guys cool off. Nimmo's cooled off. And this offense that carried this team, because when they were playing well, when they were winning games, when they were on this hot streak, no doubt the starting pitching has always been kind of solid this year. Manaea got lit up the other night. But for the most part, it hasn't been dominant starting pitching. It hasn't been great starting pitching, but it's been far better than we expected. And, you know, maybe with a stretch there of not going deep into the games, the starting pitching has been fairly pretty good. And, you know, for a time at the beginning of the year, the bullpen was excellent. We've had different times at that. But during their best baseball, what we've seen in the month of June, what thrusted them right back in to this playoff picture has been an unstoppable offense, pounding starting pitching in particular. And they've just cooled off. And the offense has not come through with the big hit. They put guys on multiple times Friday night. Alonso hits into an enormous double play in the beginning of the game. We've seen it from the Yankees. We've seen it from the Mets. Inability to come through with the big hit. And for me, as we talk trade deadline for the Yankees and Mets, I view both of them in similar positions. I think it's not exactly the same. It's not do or die. This season is not predicated on whether or not the Mets win the World Series. There is a successful season for the New York Mets somewhere in the gray between failure and winning a championship. There is none for the New York Yankees. It's win a championship or the season was a failure. So they're in different aspects as far as that, starting a new era with David Stearns as the president of baseball operations. You know, Mendy is the new manager. So it's a different feel. But ultimately, for me, at the trade deadline, they should be approaching it the same way. They should be looking for pieces to add to this team that's been as impressive as any they're battling with in the National League wild card. Now, they're not in a position necessarily where it's trade everything. They've been building assets. They're trying to build a farm system. We've had this conversation a lot. But there's no doubt they need to go out there and add on some level. And I no longer think they should sell. I think most people are at there. But here's the conversation I thought we were going to have. And here's the conversation we have to have right now about Pete Alonso. All right? Because Pete Alonso had a miserable home run derby and has followed up with an ugly series against Miami, and really a continuation of an ugly series and season on his walk year as a New York Met. And I thought we were going to spend time, days, shows, hours about what to do with Pete. Do you trade him? What are they going to do? How do you, you know? And yet here we are, and there is no way in hell they're trading him. And it's not just because, they've played themselves into a position where they shouldn't be trading pieces. It's because he's lost all value. Pete Alonso has no value. If the Mets were losing, I don't know if I would trade Pete Alonso right now. If the Mets were out of it and continued on their way, the way they were playing in April and May, I still don't think I'd trade Pete Alonso because I wouldn't get anything for him. And I'm not in the business of giving away pieces. I'll take my chances signing him on a miserable contract off a miserable year, or I'll take my chances getting draft picks that I can pick and choose who I want to draft as opposed to taking whatever other team would give me for a lousy Pete Alonso this year. And that's what he's been. And I talked about it at the beginning of the month, and I've said it a bunch. This has been an impressive run by this offense to thrust them back into this position, and I can name seven easy New York Mets who have been far more impactful in their winning than Pete Alonso. I mean, even some of the guys who have now cooled off, Taylor cooled off, Bader cooled off. Those are two players who clearly had much more to do with Pete with winning over this month and getting right back into the playoff picture than Pete Alonso has. He's got two home runs and five RBIs in the month. I know the week was off for the All-Star break, but Pete Alonso has got to be better. And we can talk about whether or not he's a lifelong Met. We can talk. Those are all different conversations. I heard Moose during the midday this week talking about how he shouldn't be in any other uniform. He needs to be in this one now because, honestly, I haven't seen him. And if the Mets are going to do this, I don't know what kind of impact players the Mets are going to get at the trade deadline. I don't know what kind of level of impact player. Certainly not offensively. Certainly not offensively. I don't think they would waste, considering how good the offense has been, I don't think they're going to put any stock or any trade value into acquiring offensive, you know, quality. They're going to go try and figure out the bullpen, maybe even a starter. I don't know, but that's what they'd be buying for. They're not going to be looking to add. If they sell Severino, which is a conversation we can get to, maybe you get that add, buy, sell, all nonsense, all rolled into one that everybody seems to think David Stearns could, you know, thread the needle and figure out just the perfect way to sell this guy and buy this guy and get prospects to buy that guy. But ultimately, Pete Alonso needs to be more of an impact player on this team. If they're going to go anywhere, if they're going to have the season they want to have, he can't be fifth, sixth, seventh, or eighth on the list of players who are impacting winning. And he's been brutal. And right now, you can't trade him because you'd get nothing for him. Forget where they are in the standings. Severino gives you value. At least I can understand that. I think he was, you know, he showed you real guts and guile. He didn't, you know, there was always runners on. It wasn't a dominant performance from Severino, but he figures out a way, even with Alonso throwing the ball away. He figures out a way to get out of a jam. He's dialed it up. I mean, he was routinely hitting 98, 99 miles an hour. The fastball's there. The stuff is there. You can get a real package. You can get a real return for Severino. You get nothing for Pete Alonso right now. Nothing. He is having a miserable walk year, a miserable year for the Mets. It's similar to Gleyber Torres. Me and Fleas are talking about it. It's similar to Gleyber Torres. You can't sell him. Now, he hasn't been quite as bad as Gleyber. At least he's got some pop. But it's in the point where he's too high a value guy to sell him now. So forget in any way, shape, or form moving Pete Alonso and forget the normal conversation we thought we'd have on whether, hey, he can be the guy, he's too good to sell, you got to retain him to give yourself a chance to sign him in the offseason. That's not even the conversation. The conversation is I can't trade him because I can't get anything for him. But if you're going to look at, you can't expect, Brandon Nimmo had a hell of a run. And if you look at it, Lindor at the top of the order, Nimmo having the run he had, we've seen J.D. Martinez go up and down a little bit. You can't expect Nimmo to carry the team the whole year. He's never been that player. I think he's a hell of a player. I think he's damn good, and I think he can have. He's on his way to having a tremendous season, but he can't carry you for the entire. He had a month of practically carrying you. How much more is he going to give you? I'm not saying he's going to go into the tank, but he can't be what he was the entire year. Even Lindor is not going to be what he was for the rest of the season at the top of the order. And certainly when you have career years from everybody in the bottom of your lineup, like right now, over the last month, you are talking about the best brand of baseball you have seen in his career from Iglesias, by far, who's now earned the starting second base position, finally. But Iglesias, best year of his career, and that's a long career, all-star in previous years. Best run of his career. Best run of Bader's career. Vientos has emerged. You're getting, you know, up until recently, Taylor was giving you as much as you could possibly have hoped for. I mean, every single question mark at the back end of the, you know, other than Stewart, really, you're getting career years. You're getting the best you could have possibly hoped for from everybody up and down the lineup. And now that it's cooled off, you need the one guy you expected, the one guy who's supposed to be your guy, the one guy who fans didn't want to trade because he's going to be the best position player to ever wear the uniform, and he's going to break every record, and he's going to do all these great, wonderful things. Well, right now, they need him to step up and do something. He has been brutally bad. And while the rest of, while, you know, the team was being carried by Lindor and carried by Nimmo and carried by Iglesias and Taylor and Bader and Alvarez and everybody else up and down the lineup, Pete Alonso can't be this bad. So they got a big game. I think we're past the point of I've talked so much about the six games heading in. I think that was the final straw for me. I don't know what else David Stearns would need. The Mets are buying. Now, could they try and sell and buy and play some shenanigans with their starting pitching depth? Although we haven't even seen Kodai Senga yet. We're hoping he's going to be back in his net. He's going to have a rehab start, and then hopefully he could be into the rotation. But we haven't even seen him pitch yet. Manaea just got beat around the last time we saw him. Quintana, same thing, off a good 3 or 4 game stretch. You know, did not have a good start his last start out. And suddenly they think they might have this depth at starting pitching. Now, they have a guy in Severino where if teams that are desperate for starting pitching fall short of getting the Scoobles and getting, you know, the Crochets and some of the top starting pitchers available in the market, could you get a King's ransom for Severino? Me and Fliegelman were discussing this. He thinks maybe you can. If you can get a King's ransom, is it worth it? I'm very hard-pressed to trade away what right now I deem to be my best starting pitcher on a team I'm hoping I can compete with. I look around the rest of the National League. Yes, Philadelphia is damn good. Yes, the Dodgers have gotten hot here. They've just been beating up on the Red Sox. Thanks, buddies. You know, yes, Atlanta's probably a better overall team than they played for a lot of the year, but like this thing seems wide open to me. And for a Mets franchise that doesn't have a lot, you know, I mean, I can't snub my nose at a year where I think I could win. And sure, could you get a King's ransom, move some of those pieces, and get another starting pitcher and a reliever and try and figure this thing out? I suppose. But for me, I want to keep everybody, add to it, and see if I can go out there and win. And it starts with the game later today. You can't go, and unfortunately for the Mets, they've gone 500 in the last 6 games against the 2 worst teams in the National League. That's the bottom line. Yes, they swept the Nationals. Yes, they've thrust themselves into this playoff situation. But if you want to actually go out there and win it, if you want to be a wild card team, if you want to go out there and make the playoffs, if you're the Mets and you got off to the start you got off to, you can't go play the worst 2 teams in the National League for 6 games, 7th later to come, and you can't go 500 against those 2 teams. That's unacceptable. And it's unacceptable riding high, coming into the All-Star break, winning 5 of 6 in that homestand, coming out and losing 2 of 3 to Miami. It's not good enough. And it's not good enough for Pete Alonso to not come through in any big situation over the last month while the rest of his team was carrying him. Now it's his turn. Now it's his turn. And you can't even move him because he has zero value. And he's hurt his he's having a miserable walk here. 888-808-1019, 888-808-1019. Let's get to the calls. Andrew in Westchester. What's up, Andrew?
Yeah, hi, Chris. What's going on?
What's up, buddy? How are you?
Very good. I just wanted to say, first of all, I listen to you all the time on the overnight. Great stuff. Always on target. Always very, very fun to listen to.
Oh, well, thank you.
Yeah, also, man, maybe one of these days you'll get back to doing the afternoons with Evan again. I loved it when you were in there together with him the last Friday a week ago.
Yeah.
Before the All-Star break over there. Very good. Two guys who are very diehard about baseball. Just very fun, very fun, very... I like the conundrum. I like how you guys work together.
Well, thank you.
I wanted to say a point about the Mets. It's obvious everyone who watches the Mets this year knows that their main need coming for buying by the All-Star, by the trading deadline, is obviously the bullpen. The bullpen has been the main problem straight through this whole year. Even during the hot stretch, there was some games where they're sitting there holding on. The only reason why they didn't blow it is because they had a 5-run lead because of their offense. So obviously the bullpen is the main concern, getting a real legitimate leverage arm into that bullpen.
Right.
Now, we know that David Stearns and Steve have spoken about that this year is an evaluation year.
Right.
And we're trying to build towards something sustainable in the future. And therefore, he probably will not be willing to give up his top prospects like a Luis Anel Acuña,
right.
Gilbert, Zet Williams.
Yes.
So I'm just wondering.
I agree. I think those guys are safe. Yeah.
Those guys probably will not be dealt. Right.
I would be very surprised if they were.
Right. So my only concern is that if so, there's so many buyers and not so many sellers, meaning there's not so many high leverage,
right.
real legitimate leverage arms out there. So I'm just wondering that all these other teams that are in more of win-now situations are going to be sitting there ready
totally.
To sacrifice
yeah.
much more of their farm to get these guys. So the Mets, I just hope the Mets aren't left shopping on the clearance rack with some Mikel Givens that they got
yeah.
2 years ago.
No, listen, I agree with you on that. I don't think there's any doubt. There will be more. Everybody needs relief help. And there are going to be way more motivated buyers than the Mets. I just think that's a fact. I think the Yankees will be much more motivated to go get a reliever than the Mets will. I think there's a lot of teams that are going to be much more motivated to go out there and shop at the top of the market. I totally agree. But that's the thing. Like, I know there are some Met fans who don't want to trade for a Tanner Scott, who's going to be a free agent at the end of the year. Like, that's really the question, right? I think we all agree they're going to buy on some level and try and help this team. But what level? Like you just mentioned, are they going to be willing to trade away one of their top prospects for a guy like if they want to? I heard a caller with Lori, too, about Tanner Scott, right? Great closer, reliever. Miami would really help this Met team. Are you going to give up top prospects for a guy who's going to be a free agent next year? Like, is that where the Mets are with this season and this team? Or are they more likely to get lesser-level guys? Or if they're going to trade a top prospect, it would have to be for someone controllable. Like, I don't know if the Mets are in the market of trading big prospects for rentals. I just don't know if they view this year as that kind of year. Yankees are. Now, that still doesn't mean they like to do it. They'd rather, like Paredes of Tampa Bay has multiple years of control. That's what you're looking for. I don't think they're looking for rentals necessarily if you're going to trade a Spencer Jones. But they're going to be much more motivated to do so if the situation's right or the player's good enough, because they need to win. The Mets don't need to win. And that's it's a positive in one way, it's a negative in another. Because you never know. Like, this might be their best opportunity. Now, this team, I still have a lot of questions about it, clearly. The offense has struggled now. And if the offense isn't going to be a juggernaut, which I can't... Here's my main thing about the Mets. When they were winning, their offense was dominant. It was a juggernaut. It was getting it from guys who you didn't... I mean, Iglesias coming up having a 1.0 OPS. Bader coming through, hitting 280, coming through with every big hit. I mean... These are things you could not have expected from this Met team. And if that's what they need to win, if they need a dominant offense, now heading into the year, we thought it would be their best feature and their best unit. And I still think there's a lot of good hitters in there where the offense can be pretty damn good. But it's not going to be a world beater for the entire season. It's not going to be what it was for that month of June the entire year. It's impossible. That's how good they were. They beat up everybody. They scored a ton of runs. Everybody was hot. Everybody was coming through. It's not how baseball works. So are they good enough in the other places? And does this general manager feel that they are a piece away from really contending in a top-heavy National League? Because I don't think there's anyone in the middle that's any better than the Mets. I don't think you can make a case for anyone they're battling with for that last or second wild card is any better. But you've got the Dodgers, you've got the Phillies, you got the Braves. That's a tough gauntlet to get through. Do the Mets and Stearns more specifically deem that this offense and this team are worthy of going out there and trading away legitimate prospects to bring back players either, you know, not under control, free agents, or under control making money or whatever it might take? Like, are they willing to do that? That's the question. Jonathan in Fort Lee. What's up, John?
Hey, C-Mac. How you doing?
Hey, buddy. What's going on? How are you?
Well, yeah, I just want to talk about the Yankees, you know, rough day. Hit everything on the head about, you know, Volpe, Torres, Verdugo, how they need to be better.
Yeah.
I think Verdugo had a really rough day today. You know, he hit a really hard ball. That would have been bases clearing, triple. Not triple, probably a double.
Well, yeah, listen, that's what happened. Volpe's hit cleared the bases. Verdugo's went into the first baseman's glove. It's just...
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, I think he needed that. That would have been really good for him. Oh. He had a bad call that rung him up.
No doubt. Yeah, he got rung up on a bad call, too. Yep. But, hey, listen, you make your own breaks. He didn't get a bad call or hit into bad luck for the, you know, 70, you know, five times or even more than that, 85 times over the last 100 at-bats. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, right. But, you know, what you said about Soto, you know, swinging 3-0.
Yeah.
I was at the time, you know, I was upset about that. If anyone's going to, you know, get a bases clear, like a knock to a big hit like that, Soto. But, you know, I just maybe consider, you know, he pitched Ben Rice 3 pitches in a row
that
were balls. He pitches Soto 3 pitches in a row that were balls. Maybe it wasn't a bad idea to take because, if he throws a strike, you take it, no, biggie 3-1. I trust Soto as much as I trust him in a 3-1 count and a 3-0 count. And then you have Judge behind you. So, I think that was bad idea, but that's not something we have to say, oh, that's why we lost the game. There were so many.
No, I know, but it's just, and thank you for the call. It's not that I trust Juan Soto. I trust Juan Soto. And all we do is kill the guy, you know, when we kill him. I shouldn't say all we do is kill him. We love him a lot more than we kill him. But any negative, the only negative is he looks for walks. You can't have it both ways. You can't constantly say the guy's looking for walks, and then when he hits, swings at a 3-0 count, get all upset about it. It's up to him. He's got the green light because he did this in Toronto. He hit a 3-run home run. He hits a grand slam there. Nobody's complaining he swung 3-0. Like, that's just, he hit a hard ground ball. I mean, I want him up there trying to do damage. That's what I want. The other night, I was pissed he bunted. I don't want him bunting. I don't care how deep the third baseman's playing. Right now, I mean, like Severino said, which I'm not going to make a big deal out of. I think it was tongue-in-cheek. You know, he's talking about how he's a text chain and, you know, with the former Yankees, but he did go publicly and say the Yankees have two good hitters. But they do. Right now, they have two dangerous hitters. I don't want either of them bunting. It led to a good inning, so I got to shut my mouth and eat it on that one. I was wrong, I guess, but I'm not bunting. I don't want Soto to bunt. Ever. I want Soto to swing the bat. And if he liked that 3-0 pitch, swing at it. Swing at it. I have no problem with him swinging at 3-0. None. Robbie in Phoenix. What's up, Robbie?
Yes, yes. Another poor performance by the Yankees.
Yes.
It's time to get rid of Glaber and DJ LeMahieu. They're simply taking up space.
Well, now, certainly DJ LeMahieu. I don't know how you get rid of Gleyber Torres, but...
Yeah, but are you prepared now to finally admit that Aaron Boone is a horrible manager?
No, of course not.
Why? Why?
Why? I don't know. Because he's got the third best winning percentage in the history of baseball.
Yeah, but that's in spite of him.
Oh, that's in spite of him. So then,
yes.
So then, Brian Cashman's a great general manager.
No, he's terrible too.
Well,
both should have been fired a long time
ago. Well, how the hell does that work? How the hell does the GM put together a crap roster and the manager be terrible and have, over the stretch of the last however many years, the best winning percentage of any manager other than two guys in the history of the game? How does that work?
When was the last time they won a World Series?
Now you're saying he's just a manager who can't win the big one. That's fine. You're saying he's a horrible manager, period. How does a horrible manager with a horrible GM have the third best winning percentage in baseball history?
Simply because of their payroll.
But the roster's good. It's the third best winning percentage of any manager in history. So the roster's good. They've won a lot of games.
No. Kevin Cash outmanages him every time, practically. He completely outmanaged him.
Oh,
today.
Yeah, sure. And then how many World Series did he win?
And the day before.
How many World Series did he win, and when did he take out his starting pitcher and get killed for it and blow the World Series? Or
if you put
how
Kevin
about Alex,
Cash
yeah. How about Alex Cora loading the bases to pitch to Freddie Freeman? That worked out for them.
Alex Cora is a far better manager.
Yeah, okay. You say so.
But let me ask you this. If Cora was the manager since 18,
yeah.
The Yankees would have won at least two.
I mean, I guess. I mean, if they probably affected cheating like he did with the Astros, and then most likely, in my opinion, I guess just guessing here. 18
I mean, I'm
with
not
the Red
the only
Sox.
Guy that says that he's terrible.
No, I understand that. I'm not saying you're the only guy. I'm saying Aaron Boone, I have problems with on some different levels, no doubt. The idea he's a horrible manager, I don't agree with at all. I don't think he's a horrible manager.
I'd rather have Mickey Callaway.
Now you're just being a fool. Now you're just being a fool. You'd rather have Mickey Callaway.
That's how bad Aaron Boone is.
Well, I mean, again, there's been two managers in the history of baseball have a better winning percentage than him. How in the world could you say he's a better manager? I mean, it's absolutely ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous. Well, I mean, you just have some weird sort of hang up on Aaron Boone to say you'd rather have Mickey Callaway. I mean, it's an asinine statement. I don't know why you hung up on Aaron Boone to this level, but again, and I'm not taking bows for winning. I'm just saying you can't be awful. This is all I'm saying. Like, you can't call me up. I'm sorry. You can try 888-808-1019. You can't call me up and tell me Aaron Boone is a hideous, horrible manager that you'd rather have Mr. Love Everybody. We get on Aaron Boone for being too gentle with the players. Mr. I'm going to love everybody more than they've ever been loved, and then, you know, take pictures of my shirt off and everything else that came along with Mickey Callaway. And obviously he's out of baseball. But Mickey Callaway is a better manager than Aaron Boone. When Aaron Boone has the best winning percentage, the third best winning percentage in the history of baseball. And that was my point about the tweet that I sent out. I don't know, I care to repeat it. But this is what gets me in trouble, and this is why I'll be called a shill. And this is why I get the big shill comment. The Yankees have won a ton of games under Aaron Boone. That's just a fact. All right? Not enough to win a World Series, totally true. But they've won a ton of games. You can't tell me that Brian Cashman sucks and is terrible at his job, and Aaron Boone sucks and is terrible at his job, and yet they've won so many games. Someone has to be doing somewhat of a decent job to win as many games as the Yankees have won, plain and simple. Not saying we have to be happy about it. I'm not even saying they can't be fired. If they don't win this year, they both should be fired. Absolutely. Would not. This is the year. That's why they're going to go out and trade. Because this is Aaron Boone loses his job if they don't win. And Brian Cashman probably loses his job. Maybe not. Let's be fair. He's that entrenched. I can't guarantee that one. But he's going to lose the manager he likes. This is a year, all in year. They're going to make trades because of that specific reason. Because they probably will be fired. And they should be. Don't get me wrong. But you can't look at all the winning and tell me everybody's terrible. That's all I'm saying. You can't tell me everybody's terrible. Winning in the regular season means something. It's not as important as winning in the postseason, but winning in the regular season means something. You want to tell me he's the manager who can't win the big one? That's a different argument. But you can't tell me he's just atrocious on every level. Because I'll give you, like you mentioned, Mickey Callaway. How about Buck Showalter? Buck Showalter, oh my God, he is clearly so much better a manager than than Boone. Look at Boone's playoff record. Look at Buck Showalter's playoff record. Oh, well, Buck Showalter didn't have the roster that the Yankees have. Well, I guess Brian Cashman put together a better roster. You can't have it every which way. Joe Torre, the great manager of the New York Yankees, was the longest run active manager, manager history of baseball. The combination of both was involved in more Major League Baseball games than anyone in history without getting to the World Series until he wasn't. Until he had a great baseball team. Until he had the core of that great Yankee team. Then he was able to make it to the World Series. And I don't remember him bashing players along the way either. And I'm not trying to compare the two. I'm just saying, like, they've done some winning here. I'm not giving him a trophy. And I'm not telling you Aaron Boone can't be fired. If I go to sleep in the afternoon and wake up to the midday show or the afternoon show talking about the breaking news that Aaron Boone has been relieved of his duties as the New York Yankee manager, I will not shed a tear. I'm not going to come on here and scream about how the hell could you do it. The team's been terrible, and they felt like a change was needed. I'm open to it. I hope. Whoever comes in, I'm assuming we all know who it would be, the bench coach. But I'm hoping he does a better job in this, and the firing sparks a fire under the team's ass. Of course, I'm a Yankee fan. That's what I'd be rooting for. But I can't stand the people. And I just can't stand to hear how everyone sucks. Like, everybody who has anything to do with the New York Yankees sucks at their job. And yet they've won all these games. And then they'll say, oh, they've been in one World Series. Well, they've won one World Series since 2000. The Dodgers have won one World Series since 1988. But everyone will tell you how great the Dodgers are run. Yeah, they've been to a couple World Series. They've lost. They won one World Series since 1988, and it was in the COVID-shortened season. One. But nobody mentions that with the Dodgers. I heard Moose talking about it. Not to, get on Moose, but I heard Moose talk about it when Nestor Cortez said that everybody's jealous of the Yankees. He went on and on about how great the Dodgers are run. I think the Dodgers are jealous of the Yankees. The Dodgers do it. The Dodgers win. What do the Dodgers win? They won one World Series since 1988. One. And then, it's just, it is what it is. But if you're going to talk, like, you can't tell me Boone's a horrible, horrible manager and Brian Cashman is a horrible, horrible GM. And then you look at the winning percentage. That's all. That's all I'm trying to say. Not saying he's as good as Joe McCarthy or that he has a lifetime contract or that Aaron Boone's the best manager in baseball or that he's even the third best manager in the history of baseball. Clearly, he's not. He's not the third best manager currently managing. He hasn't won the big one. I have a real problem with some of the stuff he says. He's kind of built an attitude of, oh, we're the Yankees, we'll be fine. All fair. He's the worst manager in the history of baseball, and I'd rather have Mickey Callaway. This is the stuff that gets me in trouble. This is the stuff that will get me to defend Boone. And I hope you're listening, Boone, to all this defending that I'm doing of you. Because I got to tell you something right now. I love my man Keith. Me and Keith, for a brief time, did the Yankee podcast together. I love Keith. He is a great Yankee fan. He loves to talk Yankees. He goes to all the games. Great Yankee fan. And I know he's on right after some games. But he doesn't come near defending Aaron Boone and fighting off the riffraff as much as I do. He'll lean into it sometimes. He'll get on Boone a hell of a lot more than I will, and I get on Boone when he deserves it. But when I hear Mickey Callaway, then I have to defend him, and I become the shill. But I have defended Boone like no one else on the station at every single turn. And I'm listening to his interview with Talking Yankees last week or whenever it was, and I hear this.
You know what? When we look up in 10 years, I think he's going to be a guy that hits in the top of the lineup. I think Keith McPherson always says, like, in 10 years.
Get with it, Boone. You're bringing up the, and then he was like disagreeing with Keith. He was bringing up a point that Keith says about Volpe that he was trying to clarify the way he felt about it and how he feels Keith doesn't exactly understand exactly what he's saying or, you know, disagrees with him in some way. How about the guys who are in here, the trenches, taking grenades for you, Boone? What, are you not awake at 2:38 in the morning? You know, we have Rewind. You can go listen to it at any time of day. I host the afternoon drive show with Evan. I get introduced as your fanboy. That's how I'm introduced. And nothing. Well, I've answered the phone for you when you used to call into the Carton and Roberts show. We've spoken. You know who Big Mac is. You've been I was referenced in interviews with you. Nothing. Sometimes I wonder why I do this for you, Boone. Sometimes I wonder, Aaron, why am I doing this? Why am I screaming at the sky trying to say you're better than Mickey Callaway? Why do I bother? So other people can get, you know, names, get shout-outs? Unbelievable.
It's the greatest case of unrequited love in history.
I know, that's true.
All of this for a man who does not love you back.
That is true. I'm doing all this. Brian Cashman, too, where the hell you been? Been doing this for years. Nothing. People think I'm on the payroll. I can't even get a thank you. Come on now. Wake up. Acknowledge the people that are here for you. And I don't do it for that. I do it because I believe it or not. I don't think Aaron Boone's a great manager. I think he's a fine manager. I don't think he's the reason they're losing. I just opened the show talking about some of the stuff I'm hearing from the players that I don't like, and it's probably because of the tenor and the mood being set by the manager. I got a real problem with it. I killed them a couple weeks ago when they had that sloppy stretch of play where it was just disgusting. I don't think he has to kill the players, but whatever he's going to do, it has to change what's going on here. And he's been unable to do it. When they get into a tailspin, he's been unable to pull them out of it, no doubt. But I certainly do not think he's a terrible manager. I certainly don't think he needs to be fired. If he is, he is. And if they don't win this year, he can't be back. I'll give you that. But I think Aaron Boone, no one ever remembers the good moves. No one ever remembers the bullpen. No one remembers the other day, like a week ago when he brought in Hill and he got a double play, then he brought in Weaver and he got a double play, pushed like three or four buttons exactly perfectly right to get a victory. No one remembers it. No one says anything about it, but we remember the one time he brought in a reliever who blew it. I think it's overblown. I think his in-game management is fine. Up until this year when they haven't had a bullpen, he's consistently had one of the better bullpen ERAs over. It's like, this is what I'm talking about. Like, when you look at the numbers and you look at what's gone on here, at some point you got to give a little bit of credit. So when you consistently have a good bullpen, you might not like an in-game move here, an in-game move there, but when year after year after year after year of Boone's tenure, they're in the top three or four in all of baseball and bullpen ERA, you want to just blindly thank Matt Blake for everything and not give the manager any credit? Okay. Like, there are things to kill him for, things to be positive for. And all my point is with the winning percentage, it's a lot of winning. It's a lot of winning to say everybody sucks. That's all. It's not the ultimate prize. I'm not telling you they deserve a trophy, nor am I happy with it as a Yankee fan. But I'm forced, just by the common sense in me, to rebuke the nonsense of everybody sucks when they've won as many games or more than anybody. I mean, and, you know, we point back to years where they won 99 games and the division title as the worst season ever. Oh my God, this is just like 2022. They won 99 games a division. We're playing in the ALCS. That's the worst of it. You want to look at other managers and see what their worst are? Other general managers and see what their worst are? General managers who have money, teams that spend money.
When this happened, you talked about it on The Fan.
There's a snap. There's a kick. It is up. It is no good. Norwood missed. 4 seconds left. The Giants have won Super Bowl 25 by the score of 20-19.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the Free Odyssey app.
All right, 248, McMonagle here with you on The Fan, 888-808-1019. Back from vacation. I think we'll get more into a little bit of vacation tomorrow night, have a little fun maybe with if Marco's in, play a little game of all the different things that kept my, I don't want to say ruined my vacation, because I did spend time with the family and had some time off to get some much-needed sleep, but it will be Marco tomorrow, so maybe we'll have some fun and talk about all the different things that sidetracked my what was supposed to be a staycation. I'll give you one right now because I don't know, you know, I'm you're not going to see me. I'm not on camera necessarily unless they post this. I don't know how entertaining it will be, but I got a big Band-Aid across my nose. And thankfully, it's finally just like a normal, you know, brown or nude-colored Band-Aid, because all I have in my house is kids' Band-Aids. And I was walking around. I literally went to the store shopping with Pokemon Band-Aids all over my face because I sliced my nose open wrestling with my kids. Because for some reason, my 7-year-old, you know, to, you know, keep up with the Joneses, needed some sort of, you know, chain to wear, I guess. And they are wearing, like, you know, the kids on his football team had them. His kids on his baseball team had them. So we got him a chain, like a gold chain around his neck. And we were messing around. And of course, you know, my kids don't just wrestle. We don't just have, like, you know, we don't just mess around and, you know, maybe have like a little ankle lock or fake a figure four. No, they jump off the couch onto my face with their knees. Their knees. I mean, and I look at them all the time. I'm like, are you trying to hurt me? Like, why would you jump off the couch, go knee first into my back? But sure enough, that's what happened. So he like jumped on me over the top of my head and then like from the back. And then went over my head and kind of like fell down and like, you know, came down like the front of me in my face. And he was all over, and my glasses were all askew and everything, like just right all over me. And then he gets up and he starts to wrestle me again. He goes, oh, and I could see it on his face that he's scared. And I'm like, what? And then I started to feel the driplets of blood coming down my nose. Somehow, I'm assuming it's his chain. I don't even know for sure, but something got me. To quote, you know, something bit me, like Forrest Gump, something got me right on the nose, and I was just bleeding and bleeding. And I don't know if this is normal with noses. This thing won't stop. Like, yes, the bleeding eventually stopped. I'm able to, you know, hopefully I'm okay. But I just had a physical, believe it or not. Tip top. Can't wait to tell Boomer. Went to the doctor. They're stunned at how well the fat guy's doing. Blood's great, cholesterol's great, all that nonsense. I didn't go to, like, you know, the same place Al and Jerry go to. I didn't go to Princeton Longevity Center. Although Princeton, I'll come down. Send me a notice. I'll be there. But it's because it's, like, right on the bridge of my nose. My glasses must have had something to do with it, too. I mean, they're not sharp or anything, and they're not broken. But, like, it's right there on the bridge of my nose. And every time I take the Band-Aid off, within an hour of just living life, scratching my nose, wearing my glasses, taking my glasses off, whatever, it just starts bleeding again. I can't keep the damn, so I have to have this Band-Aid on my face, and I feel like an idiot. It's so uncomfortable. But at least I went to the store and bought some regular Band-Aids as opposed to Pokemon and Disney Band-Aids. These colorful, like, kid Band-Aids is all over my face as I went to the store. Oddly enough, I went and got sunglasses. I went to Lens Crafters with a Pokemon Band-Aid on my nose.
I want, like, which characters were on your face?
Pikachu. Then we got a couple of what's the one with the house? And they all have the Madrigal house, and they all have powers. We don't talk about Bruno. I can't think of the movie.
Disney. Encanto. Okay.
Encanto, I had one of the characters from, one of the sisters from Encanto on my face. Like, they're all multiple different, like, every Band-Aid we bought.
So you're pretty much walking around with a Disney princess, yes, right in the middle of your face.
Correct. as I'm getting sized up for Oakley sunglasses.
Yes. Oh, you couldn't even get like, hey, is there an Aladdin one in
no,
here?
No, nothing. All of it was, I mean, listen, to be totally honest with you, I didn't, you can't really tell through the packaging. And I'm not going to open it up and go, nope, nope, what am I, 12? I opened up a Band-Aid, I put whichever one was on my face. I think one was that wasn't so bad was, I think it's Hades from Hercules, the bad guy from Hercules, which is played by James Woods. So I had him on my face once. Never thought I'd say I had James Wood on my face on the radio.
That's the where we stand. Like the one yeah. where you're like, oh, thankfully I got this, is the god of like the underworld.
Yes, the god of the underworld, the bad guy in the Disney movie Hercules, which I think is... Hades? Is it Hades? I don't know.
No, that was 90s.
No.
You know what I mean? When it came out.
No, I know. The guy, it's not 80s, Hades. Or, like, it's, I didn't say I think
no,
it was the 80s. What?
It's
Hades, Hades
right?
Yeah, yeah, okay, yeah. I thought you thought I was saying 80s. And so you said, no, that was the 90s.
Yeah, no, so I thought you were trying to guess when it came out.
No. No, I know it was, I think it was, yeah, I'm not sure when it was, but it was the 90s, I guess, Hercules. But yes. I've got the Band-Aid all over my face. And then, of course, they don't understand. He wants to go right back around. I'm like, buddy, can I clean the blood up for a second? Good Lord. That was a fun way to spend. I guess that was like two. That was like when? What's today? Monday? That was like Thursday, I guess. Thursday. I cut up my face. So that was great. And then last night, or Saturday night, we actually, because it was a vacation a little bit, we dropped the kids off at my in-laws, and we had a night. Me and the wife. And we had an idea because we've been growing vegetables in the garden. And we had these two beautiful Japanese eggplants. And so we had this idea to make like a shrimp eggplant dish. And we were going to spend the night cooking, drinking wine, making dinner, and then watching TV or whatever. So we went to the store. Instead of going out to dinner, we were going to cook some of the vegetables that came out of the garden. So we went to the store. Quick impulse buy stuff. You know, we didn't go there. We knew we wanted to get some shrimp and some other things. But then you see, oh, you know, this, that, you know, you end up getting more than you thought. And I forgot to bring a bag in with me. And the bag was in the car. So we get all our stuff. We wheel it out to the car. And then, you know, in the dark, by the car, I'm packaging a bag. And it's only one bag worth of stuff. But I'm packing the bag. I put everything in there, blah, blah, blah. And then, like, the last thing, my wife looks at me and she hands me a jar of pickles. And I said, ugh. Pickles on top of the bag? Poor planning. I made a crack about it. I made a joke. Sure enough, we drive. I put the bag in the trunk. I drive to the house. We get out. I open up the trunk. Bag tips over. Pickle jar. Poosh, broke into a million pieces in my driveway. And this is like 8:30 at night, 9 o'clock at night. It's just starting to get dark. I can't see all the glass everywhere. There's pickles all over the floor. It's literally in the driveway behind my car. I'm like, now I'm going to back out. So I had to wait for the morning. I get out there in the morning, and I'm push brooming it. Oh, it was just, what a disaster. Just
I mean, that's your fault.
Nothing.
My
fault.
If you can't get it into the bag, you got to hold the jar.
Well, it was in the bag. It was just the last thing on top. Like, typically, if you're packing the bag correctly,
I mean,
you
right. want the pickle jar at the bottom the of the bag. Be, you gotta yeah. just hold it.
But it fit into the bag. It's just when I opened up the trunk from driving around, it must have been, like, slightly leaning on the trunk. And when I opened the trunk, the bag tipped, and out came the pickle jar. Pickles everywhere. Glass everywhere. And it didn't just break into, like, a couple of big hunks. Like, I don't know. It's, like, almost like I took a rolling pin over it and made it like little tiny little shards of glass. Don't they understand that pickle jars are one of the more likely broken glass jars? What else is more likely to be broken? I mean, that's it. Can you make the glass a little bit more easy break than immediately shatters into 100 million pieces? Man. Plus, no pickles.